This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another brand new edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next hour on the show trainers listen to. You, of course, are tuned in all across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and you're streaming us live or podcasting at horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest is roughly 1 month or so into her training career. 1 week ago, she came within a nose, and I mean it was a flared nostril, of finding out what it feels like to saddle her first career winner. It's a feeling her father, Joe, knows extremely well. He's coming off his first ever leading trainer title at Emerald Downs this past summer. Her brother manages Waldorf Farm in upstate New York. So for her, horse racing is and always has been a family affair. Please join me in welcoming trainer Kara Toy to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Kara, appreciate the visit.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to hear your story. You know, it's interesting when you see your name on Equibase or in the program, it says Kara Lynn Toy. So do you prefer Kara Lynn or Kara Toy?
Well, my mom was also a trainer. So before she met my dad, she's Carrie Toy, and there was always our mail would get mixed up and all sorts of things, and we're one letter off. So later on in life, I was kind of angry because bills would come late or whatever, and she said, well, just go by Kara Lynn. I'm like, why didn't you name me that? So I guess it was just my way of differentiating, but honestly, I don't care. You can call me Kara.
Yeah, I mean, your mom a trainer, your dad a trainer, your brother working, managing the farm. Was this all you were ever going to do, Kara?
It's all I wanted to do. I mean, I went to college. My dad was kind of mad because he wanted me to continue to work for him. But I wanted options in life, but I knew they were just options. And the thing that I really wanted to do, I'm finally doing it. So here I am. I actually have another half-brother who runs a feed company and sells high-end alfalfa in on the West Coast. So even more so. All the bases.
Yeah, that's the place to be if you want that. Was it that Washington, what's it called, three tie or three? What's the name of the hay that's made out there? It's a really good area
Timothy.
For producing hay, right?
Yep, Timothy and
yes.
High-quality orchard grass and alfalfa.
Yep, yeah, that's what I thought. You know, you think about that and you think about your family background, and I mentioned in my open that it is a family affair for you. You said you went to college, though. You thought about keeping your options open. Where'd you go to school?
I went to school in Central Washington University. I figured I really just wanted to avoid math. And so for some reason, I chose a business program, which shows how much common sense I might have. But I figured the whole world was in business and supply chain. So I figured that was kind of all encompassing. So that's where I ended up.
When did you realize?
It took me 7 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, when did you realize that college wasn't going to be, well, I guess not for you, but that you were going to be back in horse racing and not pursue something else?
I tried it. I got hurt so many times. It was really the main thing. I had always ridden and kind of resold, repurposed all my family's racehorses and kind of put myself through college doing that. And, you know, I got hurt a lot. So I broke my back. I broke both my ankles. Both my wrists, all this through this hobby of mine. And I was like, you know, never been hurt on a racehorse, and that's the one that's actually going to pay me. So, you know, I just never could really get away from it.
Yeah, are you still getting on horses today?
all of my own. I definitely, I've taken a meandering path to where I'm finally at, and I'm happy, and I've, you know, kind of turned both feet walking forward into this career path. But, yeah, I was breaking babies and thought, well, might as well do it for myself. So here I am.
All right, so this show is all about you, and I don't like to talk about me very often on this program, but I'm going to tell you a quick story. I don't know how you do it, because I've been on a horse twice in my life for a trail ride, both times. It scared the hell out of me both times, thinking, if this horse wants me off their back, they're a lot bigger than me, I'm gone. And I was very, very nervous. They say that's not good because horses can sense that kind of stuff. I never did get very comfortable. Why, after everything you went through with all the broken bones and this and that, why would you still want to get on a horse, Kara?
Well, you know, the more everybody I kind of encounter, I'm learning from, right? So part of this meandering path was dressage lessons that I was taking. And I really learned that, like, some of the greatest outbursts and things like that is really just insecurity in a horse. So kind of learning why things happened and thinking it through and, like, I guess pure obsession. I just wanted to master it. I mean, I've ridden with Olympians and things like that and had some success at the show horse world, but nothing really transferred right through to the horse racing and the breaking and the riding until I kind of really got interested in why horses acted the way they did and things like that. So I guess I'm just fascinated and obsessed.
Does it get to the point where you can tell when a horse is going to misbehave?
Yeah, I would say that that's one of the greatest ways of keeping horses safe and riders safe is just that anticipation. They really feel your energy kind of thing. So if you're listening, you know, they're speaking.
Would that be the same thing for a jockey too, do you think?
Yeah, and the good riders just have feel. It's feel that ultimately, you know, can settle one or, you know, two steps ahead of them, they can spot a situation and say, oh, I'm not going to run up on these heels because I'm going to have to take back, and I can exhale maybe and, you know, get the horse to really check back in. So the dressage term would be a half halt, but that's another story.
Okay, a half halt.
Well, yeah, I don't want to get into the show horse thing because I don't want that to define me, but I learned a lot this year. That's what I can say the most, with breaking babies and just blank slate of actually starting to study horses in a different way.
There are so many trainers who have come on this program over the years that have a background in the show horse world, and now they're successful thoroughbred trainers too. So I wouldn't hide from that, Kara. I think that's an impressive trait that you have. Do you find that there are things that you learned in working with those show horses that you're able to apply today?
Yeah, it's so much a different base of horsemanship. So I got to learn from some really cool people, but another thing that helps with the show horse thing is really spotting and being able to kind of like find a really good part of this path. I had some kick-ass girls that were there with me riding these babies at 8 degrees this winter and breaking all of them. And one of them was Crystal Conning, the rider, and the other one was Gina Lucille. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were good equestrians on top of, they didn't come into the sport of horse racing because they were bad at their other sports. They were just interested. So, you know, I haven't even won a race yet, so we'll see if it works, but hopefully it pays off.
What's the most important lesson a rider can learn when they're working with young horses and breaking babies like that?
Oof. It's a lesson that I mean, from my experience, you can only learn it the hard way, is to really check your ego to the side. Nothing will humble you faster than a horse in general, but especially a young thoroughbred. So if you come onto it like, oh, I'm going to stay on this horse, like I'm going to skip step A and step B and, you know, try and skip a step and go straight to the racetrack just because I can stay on, you don't get rewarded for it in my experience so far. So, I mean, you ask a horse for something it's not ready for, that's usually when you get hurt. So,
yeah.
I've got 39 pins and screws to prove that point.
Wow. And you're still getting back on horses. That's amazing. Yeah. To me. And I say that to all the jockeys I talk with, too. I've become very close with so many of the riders in the game over the years. And it's just amazing to me that they could continue to get back on horses after sustaining some of the most major injuries you could possibly think of in the world of sports.
Yeah. I mean, Scott Stevens, right? And
yeah.
And his brother Gary, they were similar, so. And also from the Northwest, right?
Yeah, that's right. Much like yourself, talking with Kara Toy here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. All right, let's do this, Kara. I do want to talk about the race you almost won at Keeneland the other day, because that's quickly becoming part of your story. You were so close to experiencing that first career win. But let's go back to the beginning. You talked about your mom being a trainer. I mentioned your dad and, of course, his leading trainer title at Emerald Downs this past summer. Your brother working on the farm. Your other brother, half-brother, having the feed company. Let's go back to the beginning. Tell me about the early days of Kara Toy and growing up in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, I always wanted to ride. That's all I wanted to do was ride horses. And I loved my dad would let me ride the pony horse. And escort him to and from the track. And it was dual purpose. You know, we were the last barn. It was a quarter mile of concrete up and down. So I really thought I was doing something. And I just kind of just wouldn't really let him not let me ride other horses. I'd crawl on him in the shed row and stuff like that. And, pretty soon, you know, I was 15 and he signed the paper and kind of maybe we fibbed a little and I started getting my exercise license. And it was a cool way to learn. It was hard on me, but we had one two-year-old filly, and her name was Sin City Slough, and I started galloping her, and then he let me breeze, but he breezed alongside me on the pony down the lane, and I never let her go fast because she was fast, and I didn't want him to break my pony down. So it was kind of not the greatest introduction to breezing, but it got the job done, and the horse could run a little, so that was really rewarding. But I definitely wasn't technically old enough to be on the track. So he paid me not very much a week. He paid me on Sundays, and I think he forgot a few Sundays. And, you know, that's why I went to college. I was like, well, man, I want to get paid somewhere, you know? So I was just kind of obsessed, but if there was a chance that I could be at the racetrack, I did. If there was a three-day weekend in high school, I flew to Turf Paradise and helped my dad, did everything I could. And I loved it. But they didn't really want me to be stuck there, but kind of they wanted the free labor. So it was always a catch-22 there.
Yeah, your dad had it made. It wasn't just you. He had your brothers working with him too, right?
Yep. I mean, my brother, the middle child, Kenny, he didn't ride until quite a bit later, but the oldest brother, he put his time in. I think he put at least 10 years in of really being some kind of assistant for my dad. And he was just a hard working kid, hard working man now. And, you know, I'm proud of him, that's for sure. But he left the track, so I hate that for him because he was a good horseman. But, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah, he's still involved, though, right? He's running Waldorf Farm in upstate New York?
Well, the oldest brother is the feed company, but
okay.
Kenny got back into it, and he
gotcha.
Has quite the story. After stage 3 cancer, horses were really what brought him into the state of health that he's in, and it kind of really saved him. So he was just became obsessed over the racing aspect of it and really seeing, like, following the West Coast thing or the East Coast kind of grandeur of racing. You know, we just didn't really have that on the West and where we were from because we were so secluded. But he followed me, I'd like to say. So even though I'm the baby, I end up taking care of him sometimes. He'll hate to hear that, but he knows.
Yeah, his story is fantastic, too. You mentioned the stage 3 cancer, and you just mentioned the fact that horses helped save him. And there are so many stories, and even programs in the sport today, where horses will work with, let's say, inmates or with veterans coming back from deployment, and they have a therapeutic effect. How did horses help Kenny?
Well, he was living in Hawaii and, you know, in this beautiful area, and he gets to kind of say he left cancer on an island, but he started going to this Arabian farm just to be around him. And he would write. He would write to his family and to everybody and really just kind of share his story and relate it to, like, you know, how, like, if I were a racehorse in a starting gate, this is how I would feel. We shared some of his writing. It's phenomenal. It's just phenomenal because he did it so secluded. I mean, he was as far away as he could possibly be from his family and still had to stay there because he was doing cancer treatments. And he ended up getting a colectomy, which is total removal of his colon. So, you know, he's gone through some serious life changes and went from Hawaii all the way to New York, and he's now starting a family there. So, you know, my poor parents, but, you know, we're trying to spread our wings, and they're pretty far at this point.
Yeah, I'd say so. Talking with trainer Kara Toy. This is Trainer Talk presented by Paisley Tipton. You're listening here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kara, that's such an inspirational story, too. And I'm sure that when you look at your brother Kenny, you think, wow, I mean, this guy's courageous. This guy's tough. And the things that he's had to overcome in life, it kind of puts a lot of things in perspective, too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it helped focus me. I mean, not to sound like there's this huge sob story, but when it was him and I together kind of running the farm when my parents would train down in Arizona, and in 5 years of our life, I can skip over this or not, but in 5 years, you know, our house burnt down, my brother got cancer, my best friend died while we were skiing, and all sorts of things like that. And it just was like this extremely tumultuous period of time, and we at least had each other, and together, you know, we sort of focused in on horse racing after this, you know, this path that we took. We ended up both at Pegasus together, and you know, we just got really rolling together, and it just, at least we were interested, and we kind of bounced off, like, oh yeah, maybe the East Coast, maybe we should do this, maybe we should move to Kentucky. We moved into the same apartment at two separate times, but, you know, the tragedy is hopefully passed on now, and we're entering a darker or a lighter period.
Yeah. Yeah, I would hope so. That's more tragedy than anybody should have to deal with, and you had to do it in a very short period of time. And I love the fact that you mentioned that you just kind of immersed yourself into racing and into the horses. And again, another example of how horses can be therapeutic and help people through extremely difficult times.
Absolutely. I mean, every success I have or whatever, I do owe to horses. I mean, aches and pains too. But
yeah.
You know, we're very fortunate to at least the thing that my parents and our parents gave us the most was work ethic. And, you know, the horse industry fortunately rewards you for that.
Oftentimes, Kara, trainers will tell me that their parents really, even though they were in the sport, they really were hoping that their kids would take a different path and not have to get up at 4 a.m. every day and, you know, 365 days a year and be at the racetrack and do this particular job for a living. How about your parents? Were they supportive of the decision that you made to become a trainer?
It's tough to say. I mean, I would say yes. My mom definitely would kind of drill it in. She's like, you know, I want you to have security. I want you to, you know, I didn't want this life for you, the hard parts of this life. But at least I was prepared. I was not surprised by any of the things that the hardships that I've had and, you know, the tears that I've had and the pressure and all sorts of things. I was prepared for it, but she hasn't said I told you so yet, but I'm sure it's coming.
Your dad has been training since, what, the 1970s, I guess. And I mentioned that Emerald Downs training title this past summer. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's his very first training title at any racetrack, right? Not just Emerald.
Yeah, Yeah, and I hate, you know, he's a proud man. That might embarrass him some. I mean, he's had 11,000 starts as a trainer, but, you know, he's done right by horses. And that's what I lean on when I, you know, you come to the East Coast and they say, who's your dad? And I say, he's a trainer. And they say, oh, Golden Gate or Santa Anita, Del Mar. No, but you know what? He's been in the game that long because he's done it the hard way, and he's done it, you know, his way, and I'd like to say the right way. I mean, he's done right by horses, start to finish, and same with the owners. So I guess longevity is something that I definitely am proud of for him. So.
Yeah, and it's not like he doesn't know how to train a racehorse. He's had, I'm looking at his statistics right now on Equibase, he's had more than 1,100 winners in his career. You don't do that without knowing a thing or two about horses and training.
Yep. I had to kind of really, like, beg him a little bit, like, hey, you can help me some more, you know?
Like, has he been helpful, or is he more, hey, you have to learn on your own?
Especially lately, yeah. The problem is, you know, he was really wrapped up this summer, and he finally got some good help, so he got to lighten up a little bit. But they have over 30 horses in the barn at all times, so I can understand. I can empathize wholeheartedly, especially now. So I only have 6.
Yeah, it's a different ball game when you get up into anything over 20, I think, changes the game a little bit, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's so different, the West to the East Coast. I mean, it's so different the way that horses are managed every day and things like that. I mean, it's not a strange concept that, you know, horses live outside all the time and all sorts of things like that. But, hey, Wesley Ward made it work, and he's from our same hometown, so... You know, goals.
Yeah. What is the biggest difference between the West Coast and what you're seeing back here in the East Coast?
I would say the lack of hot walkers. The machine hot walkers do help, but it's definitely more handling of horses here. I wouldn't say that the West is hands off. It's just there's kind of less people around, and it's less of a industry that's supported. So. Off the top of my head, because I just got done training at Keeneland and I have to pay my guys right now, you know, it would be how much more they're handled at this point here. But, you know, it doesn't always mean it's good handling. So some of those guys are pretty amazing horsemen that come from such small circuits, you know, so I'm not knocking them by any means.
Yeah. What do you think it is that's allowed your dad to have the kind of success? By the way, talking about her father, Joe Toy, what do you think it is that's allowed your dad to have so much success in his career?
Work ethic. No one works harder. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think he's over 70 and he still rides his own, and he mixes his own feed, and you know, he ponies his own horses to the gate because. You know, maybe it's a control issue that he has, but that's what he knows, and he knows the horse so well, top to bottom, inside and out. So his work ethic is literally unmatched, and it's been hard for me to. I started out kind of trying to be like that, and I realized I was going crazy because it was too much for me to manage. So. That's one thing he has always done, and he's always done well, is finish every job, literally, every job.
Yeah. You know, I grew up working alongside my father in our family business, too, and there were things that I learned from him that I'd say we did the same. There were things that, you know, I looked at things a little bit differently. There were things that I did differently than him, trying to achieve the same goals. How about you? What are some of the things that you do similar to what your dad does and has done over the years, and some of the things that you do a bit differently than what he probably would do?
Well, the show horse thing is something that I definitely bring to the table, but I always wanted to ride like him. And, I got a lot of where I am right now. I just kind of had all these mentors that respected my dad, and not that I didn't work for it and not that I leaned on him, but I wanted to ride like him. So I definitely, you know, he's somehow, you know, been riding racehorses his entire life. And I've been injured more than him, so clearly one of us is doing it right. But I take a little more risks than him as far as, you know, those ego checks that I've received along the way was me just trying to be cowboy or trying to do too much. And, you know, it's been a hard lesson because I'm stubborn and this and that and the other thing, and I've always wanted this, but I'm calling him a lot more now, and I'm like, okay, what do you think about this? And like, shoot, he was right. He was right all along. He was right all along about all these things that he would always just literally just scream to us, like, you're asking too much or you're doing too much or, you know, you can't overface him or whatever. And I'm like, well, I can stay on. I'm all right. But being cowboy doesn't get you anywhere sometimes. So.
Yeah, and as you're saying that, I could totally relate because I was thinking back to some of the things that, you know, as you're a young person growing up, you always think you know more than your parents, right?
Yeah,
and,
right.
And as you're saying, oh, you know, he was right about this. And it takes you a while to figure those things out.
Yeah, 33 years, so.
Yeah, eventually you start to figure things out. Kara Toy, my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Faisik Tipton. You mentioned another really big name. That's Wesley Ward. And as we know, Wesley has had a tremendous amount of success in the sport. You said he's from your area. Have you had the chance to spend much time talking with Wesley?
I was, I had this, like, you know, this revelation when I moved to Kentucky. I had gone to Europe. And I didn't get accepted into the Darley Flying Start. I had applied kind of twice in my life, and I thought that was always my life goal. So I went to Europe. I worked sales. I went to some of the races, and I did this global racing tour, moved to Kentucky with everything I could pack in my truck. And Wesley said, Kara Toy, I need an assistant in New York. And I had had 4 interviews with TaylorMade. They didn't hire me. I was deflated about it. You know, and turns out it was a blessing. But he had hired me to go to New York to be his assistant, and I packed my bags at this little apartment in Versailles. And little did anybody know, there is some low-income housing in Versailles, and it was not a great spot, and it was winter. And I was going to go up to New York, and I looked at my packed bags, and I called my mom, I called my dad. I had been talking to Wesley, and I cried. And I was like, I don't want to leave Kentucky. I just don't want to do it. And he was so cool about it because he had had all these things in the works and an apartment for me and things like that. And I was like, I don't think I'm ready. But, you know, if Wesley says I am, I am. But he was really cool about it. And it was like the greatest job that never was. So
yeah.
I stuck it through. And
yeah,
I'm kind of stabled next to him right now. But, you know, I'll make him a mentor sooner rather than later, hopefully.
Yeah, he's a good one. If you can pick his brain a little bit, he's always willing to help, and he's so smart, and he's had so much success. Kara Toy here on Trainer Talk, presented by Faisik Tipton. Kara, stay with me. We're going to get to a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk more about your life, we'll talk about your career, and talk a little bit about your time, well, in the media, so to speak. We'll do that when we return. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Faisik Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This November, the sport's brightest stars will be offered for sale at Faisik Tipton. With a sensational catalog featuring no less than 11 champions, Breeders' Cup winners, and Classic winners. Over 30 Grade 1 winners or producers, nearly 50 graded stakes winners or producers, and over 140 selected weanlings. All this in one spectacular session. The world's premier breeding stock event, the Faisik Tipton November Sale, November 9th in Lexington, Kentucky. Where will you be?
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Faisik Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Already Charming has the lead by 2 lengths. Stanley Market second. Jakachi is in third. Hal's Dream runs toward the rail. Gimme Mo Baby comes from the outside. And then Paris Paramore. Gimme Mo Baby and Jakachi coming after Already Charming. Gimme Mo Baby. Hal's Dream to the inside. Hal's Dream. Already Charming is there. Gimme Mo Baby down to the wire. What a finish. Photo for the win in the nightcap at Keeneland.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, visiting with trainer Kara Toy on this week's edition of the program. That was Kurt Becker with the call of the eighth race at Keeneland last Wednesday. It was a maiden special weight race for two-year-old fillies. Hale's Dream held on by, as Tom Durkin would say, a flared nostril over Gimme Mo Baby. The runner-up, Gimme Mo Baby, trained by Kara Toy, and it would have been her first career victory as a trainer. Instead, she'll have to wait for another day. But what an effort by Gimme Mo Baby. What an effort by Hale's Dream to hold on by a nose. And Kara, I can only imagine, as you're listening to that stretch call again, you're probably like, why on earth did he replay this race?
It kills me. I went back to the barn. I had some trainer friends there. They were like, don't watch the replay. Do not watch it. And I was just screaming. I'm surprised Kurt Becker's call didn't pick up me hollering. You know, I was standing in the winner's circle where everybody else was watching, and would have been nice to get my photo taken, but oh.
You posted the video, or somebody posted the video of that scene in the winner's circle on your Twitter page, and it looked like you were celebrating a win.
Well, we kind of thought. I mean, I thought at least that might have been a dead heat. I mean, I was in an angle. You know, I'm trying really hard not to develop superstitions, and I don't want to be that way. My mom's really superstitious, and it's annoying. So I'm like, I pick a different spot to watch my own races. I can't decide if I should bet or not bet. But I was like, maybe that might be a dead heat. So I wasn't the only one. My friends were like, you got it. And I just, what a feeling.
Yeah, so you did kind of get that feeling of, oh, my gosh, we just won our first race. But then how about the feeling when they put the number up and you saw it was number three and not number four, your horse?
If the camera's on the other one, I've they're not usually wrong. And I was once a camera girl myself. So I knew I was at a disadvantage from where I was watching, so they were probably right. And, you know, I've had a low amount of rodeos, but it's not my first rodeo, so
yeah,
I can handle a little heartbreak.
Yeah, well, it was impressive, and I know you were very proud of Gimme Mo Baby and the effort that she put in.
Oh, I mean, that's my first horse, so essentially under my name. I've had some other ones, but and they were heartbreaks too, as far as some pretty cool horses. I named my first one Cheers and Prayers, and I named her, he was born right after my best friend had passed away, and all sorts of things. And that horse actually turned out to be pretty decent, but this one I broke her, and on my path to where I am, Tim Hamlin looked me in the eye and said, time to grow up. And he basically handed me the leash shank, and it was her. So to get there with her was surreal.
Yeah, just a fantastic story. And by the way, if you missed any portion of this visit with trainer Kara Toy on tonight's show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, to listen to the podcast. You can listen to this show and all of our trainer talk shows, horseracingradio.net, and wherever you get your podcast from, they'll be available for you there too. All right, so Kara, let's focus on the next steps now. So now you're so close, you're a nose away from having that first career win. You mentioned to me during the commercial break that you have a couple of colts in the barn, but you have some fillies that you're really proud of, including Gimme Mo Baby. Tell me about the horses that are in your care right now.
Well, I have another starter tomorrow. He is a specimen of a racehorse. He's gorgeous. But, you know, if you look up on paper, the bloodstock industry can be really harsh. As even I learned this lesson yesterday. I mean, they cut down Mo Baby left and right because, you know, they wanted a buyer and, you know, whatever. So anyway, this horse won't impress many people on paper, but physically he's pretty nice. It was a journey getting him there, and it's Mo Baby's work partner. So, it's been interesting because they just develop differently. So
yeah,
the fillies I get, you know, the insecurity and things like that, they really try for you when you unlock all the parts.
Yeah, we should throw this in there, too, because people are listening to this. Of course, it's Wednesday, 6 to 7 Eastern is when our Trainer Talk window airs on SiriusXM. And we are recording this on Tuesday, Kara. So there's a good chance that when this show airs on Wednesday night and people are listening to it, you may very well have your first career victory if Fort Defiance can win the second race at Keeneland on Wednesday. How cool would that be?
It would be more than a dream come true.
Yeah.
So if you called me the day after, I'd probably have no voice left. So.
We'd have to do a part two. I'd have to do an amendment to the Trainer Talk show.
All right. Well, he's up against it. You know, he only had a month off, and it was really just kind of developmental stuff like that. So he's been all systems go since I broke him, and he was a big, heavy-bodied, but manly colt. And so what a drastic difference from all the fillies I had that were in the barn and things like that. And, you know, they were kind of delicate or whatever, and he was all man, all boy. So, it's different for me. I definitely, as a rider, because I'm soft and things like that, and, you know, I don't really want to manhandle a horse, but some colts need it. And it's not something that comes natural to me. So he's been a little bit of an experiment, and I'm thankful that the owners have been on board with me along the way. So we'll see how it lands.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the owners. How have you been able to acquire the horses to get you started with your training career?
A lot of it came through show horses and breaking, but people believed in my horsemanship, and that's the most flattering thing I could ever – I can't even wrap my head around it. I mean, I have an Into Mischief in the barn. I have a Kitten's Joy out of a grade one placed mare. I have, some other horses that mean a lot to their owners, and that means a lot to me that they're in my care, and, you know, their dreams are in my hands, and I don't take it lightly, but it is a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
So it's pretty cool.
I'm sure it is, and you probably put a lot of pressure on yourself, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, there's some mental health issues, I'm sure, developing, but just being in the bloodstock industry has really helped me, and just meeting people, making connections or whatever, and then I repurposed a lot of these people's horses from, you know, into their second career. So they kind of knew that I had an idea of how to care for their horse and things like that. So I broke five of my six horses in my barn, and the sixth one is somebody I really respect, and she's done a great job. So it's really delightful to have, like, basically, you know, a mold of clay, and I get to go from here and really express myself with a horse.
Yeah. Yeah. You are stabled at Keeneland. And when you think about sports and you think about famous venues, iconic venues, there's, like, you know, Wrigley and Lambeau Field and Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park. In horse racing, you have Saratoga, you have Keeneland, you have Del Mar. Keeneland is a lot like, for a horse trainer, I would imagine, playing home games at one of those other iconic venues. What's it like for you, a young lady from the Pacific Northwest, to now be stabled and running horses at Keeneland?
It's the coolest thing I could even wrap my head around. I mean, I don't have a family or anything like that, so I think it's one of the coolest things I've ever done. When I went to Europe and I did this little tour, David Mia helped me out a lot. So, like, huge shout out to the Mias, because they're amazing. But, you know, everybody would be like, oh, who's your dad? Where's he from? Where'd you grow up? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you've never heard of it. And now if I get to go back to Europe and see the same people or whatever, and, you know, walk into Goffs, I get to say, I have horses at Keeneland. And they know. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. And I asked you, during the commercial break, as we were talking there waiting to come back from the break, I asked you if your parents had ever made the trip to Kentucky to visit. And you said your mom had been here for the sales, but your dad's never been.
No. If a lot of things. And, man, if he would have, you know, maybe not had us or whatever, and he probably would have been an amazing two-year-old trainer himself. I mean, I learned a lot from him and some other people along the way too, but he probably would have, could have, should have, would have had a lot of success here if he would, if he came here.
Yeah. So. What'd you say you were going to do with the, you told me you were going to do something with the money if Gimme Mo Baby had gotten that nose in front in that race last Wednesday.
I would have bought him a plane ticket and given him no choice but to come here because, you know, I would have been real cocky too, you know, so, like he could have helped me run this other horse. I want to share this with him. And, my brother, he hasn't been to New York either. And so my brother is probably pretty salty about that also, but you know, we just want to show him like, basically look what you've done. So the time will come. He's unfortunately moving, you know, as he is, he's probably trucking his own horses down to Arizona and settling them in right now for the Turf Paradise meet. So I'm going to miss out. But, you know, maybe he'll get here for my first win. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be great to have him by your side if it all works out. There's no doubt about it. Talking with trainer Kara Toy, just getting started with her training career. If you are just tuning into the show, she nearly won her first race last Wednesday at Keeneland. She came within the nose of pulling off that feat. She only has a 6-horse stable. And she's had 6 starters so far and still looking for that first win. It'll happen before too long. And, you know, who knows? Again, we're recording the show on Tuesday. You're listening to it on Wednesday. She has a horse in the second race at Keeneland on Wednesday, Fort Defiant. So there's a chance that maybe she will have already won that first race by the time that this show is airing. One thing you mentioned when we were talking about the race last Wednesday, Kara, was that your mom is very superstitious. You're trying hard not to develop any superstitions. Do you think you're going to have some, though? I mean, come on. I'm Italian. Italians are very superstitious. I have plenty of racetrack superstitions.
It kills me, you know, and in my background with the media stuff, I did a spot. I had this little thing that would just educate the Canterbury Racing Club, and I had Canterbury with Kara, and I did the racetrack superstitions, and I was like, well, I can think of 20 off the top of my head, and people were like, oh, that's not a thing. And I'm like, well, I thought it was, you know, and it came from my mom. But yeah, it's hard. There's so many things that you think will change your luck, and now I know the one thing I don't want to be like my family is not have that, because I led the horse over and I said, it's out of my hands. I mean, I got her to the dance safely and it was out of my hands there. And that was the hardest thing to do. So, you know, I don't want to like, I didn't bet her the second time, but I bet her the first time. And like, cause I didn't want to be superstitious. And then I stood in a different spot. So like, I think it's probably worse what I'm doing now. I don't know. I'm sure every trainer's got something.
Yeah, I am very superstitious when it comes to betting at the racetrack. In the days before I was betting on ADWs, and even sometimes when I do have to go up to a teller now, remember the old days when you have to walk up to a teller and actually make a bet. I'll try to go to the same teller if I'm winning. If the tickets are in my right pocket when I'm winning, I keep them in my right pocket. Until it loses, then the pocket becomes unlucky and I have to switch pockets. Lucky pen theory, if I'm using the same pen and I have a winning day, that pen has to go back with me the next day. I'm kind of a wacko when it comes to those kinds of things.
Well, then it's not just me.
No. What do you think? What do you think if you were going to have one racetrack superstition, what do you think it would be, Kara?
Oof. Well, honestly, the gambling, like where I put my ticket is one of my biggest things. So, I've really worked on getting rid of all the other ones, but you know, I hated that my mom would always, don't take a picture of the horse before the race, that's bad luck, or don't say the word win and all sorts of things. And there were all these rules for being around this racehorse. I'm like, it's just a horse, you know, but I don't want to sound cocky. I really thought that filly was going to run a big race because I'd entered her so many times. She was on the also eligibles 3 times and had, you know, she has 2 starts, so I'd entered her how many times. And I knew what I was sitting on, like some kind of powder keg every day. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I was almost short-circuiting of all the ways that I could mess it up, and I just got her there and basically closed my eyes. When I looked up, she was in my eyes, hopefully dead heating, but oh well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it'll happen. You'll have that thrill. You'll know that feeling. You kind of knew it, but then it was taken away from you. You'll know it before too long. There's no doubt about it. Earlier, you said that you would oftentimes, or you did after the race, see which horse they were showing on camera because you knew that that's typically the winner. The camera person always seems to get it right, and you were a camera person at one point in your journey here. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Emerald Downs has always had my back. It's such a cool community. Joe Witte hired me as the quarter pole camera girl, and it was $10 an hour. And I thought that was pretty cool, but it was late nights, and I had early mornings too, so they had night racing. So I don't think I stuck through it very long, or maybe it was the end of the meet, but I thought $10 an hour was a great wage. And the meet ended. I think I ended up going, I would do anything for money. I went and changed tires for 2 years of my life because they paid me $10 an hour.
Really?
While I was in college, yeah, for sure. They worked with my schedule, so of course, it sounded great.
Yeah, well, nobody will ever say that Kara Toy is not a hustler.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I worked for it, so I would catch ride and try to go to my classes, and I took as little college as I could to still say I was a student, and I'm thankful that my collegiate career came along because you had to be full-time. Otherwise, I'd probably still be taking classes, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed work, so...
Did you know anything about running a camera when they put you in that position?
No, absolutely not. And it was before the days of cell phones, like real cell phones, you know? So, like, it's not like I was surfing Facebook. That didn't exist. It was really boring, really boring. And you climb up that thing, and, you know, I hardly had any money, and it was next to the Quarter Chute Cafe, and I would, you know, always want to eat in between races or do something, but couldn't afford it. So I just have to sit there in the sweltering heat of the summer and hope that the thunderstorm and lightning didn't hit me and, you know, talk to the other guys on the headset. But they were really, I mean, I had nothing in common with them. So. Joe Witte told me it was a skill I could take anywhere. And I was like, oh, I guess there's sports people. And, you know, if I ever needed a job, there's a skill.
Yeah. And you did some paddock work there too, didn't you? Like,
yeah,
a paddock reporter?
Yeah, that was a learning experience for sure. But once again, sports, man, I was only ever interested in horses, and they would have, like, I just still cringe thinking about it. I couldn't pronounce Manu Tuiasosopo's name. I can now. And, like, it was hard for me because you had to do a lot of research and things I wasn't interested in because they wanted to make it colorful and they did such a great program. But I learned a lot. It was cool. It was definitely really cool.
You know,
I had thought maybe I wanted to pursue it in Kentucky, but I thought, well, I don't want to look stupid in the big stage. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can imagine. And I think you fell into the right niche here. Training racehorses. It sounds like your passion, your love is all about the horse, and you're doing what you love right now, which makes it all worth it. There's a name that folks who are familiar with Horse Racing Radio Network and have listened for years are familiar with, and that's Sean Feld. We like to call him Puffy because that's his nickname. But Sean has worked with us in the past, and Sean is somebody who played an integral role in getting you started here in Kentucky, didn't he?
Absolutely. Like, huge shout out to Sean. He always took me seriously. When I had first come to Saratoga and I was there so new, so fresh, not knowing anybody on the East Coast, he was friends with another girl from California and things like that, and she vouched for him. And, like, he always took me seriously. So he got me my first job here in Kentucky, just working the sales for Carrie Brogdon at Select Sales. And I had heard that they cut people on the days. And so I worked really hard. I was always seen with a rake or a broom or something like that because I wanted to be here and be paid for it. And it was a small token or a small gesture for him, but it meant a lot to me. I ended up, you know, continuing to do business with him. I hope to do more, but I bred a horse to Curlin to Mischief, maybe a couple of them. And, you know, that actually, I got paid for my yearling. And, Sean took me seriously. And that's something that's kind of hard to find as a female here in Kentucky, especially a young one. And, you know, maybe looks have something to do with it. But, you know, all we want in this world is a little bit of respect. So I'm working for it.
Yeah. Do you find that it can be more difficult for a female to, I don't know, make her mark in thoroughbred racing?
Yeah, it's really hard because there's a lot of ways to get into horse racing. And I wanted something that could be not be taken away from me and come into it. I wanted to be known as and hopefully it happens, but known as a horseman, not as a pretty face or, you know, the party animal or whatever. Not that every female comes into the industry that way, but some do. And I don't have the nepotism that, you know, my family works hard. They're blue collar and they're not from around here. So it can be pretty difficult, but I have to kind of refocus every single day and say, that's not important. You know,
what's the most important lesson that you've had to learn now that you're pursuing a training career?
You know, just that every decision I make, like with a horse or entering one or whatever, it's the entering thing is a whole different ball game, but just like chuck your ego. I've just tried to stay really focused on the things that I'm good at or building on small wins and not making decisions that involve like having this huge ego, even though it's horse racing and there's a lot of that in it. But I mean, I can only do, as long as I stay doing what I do well, and then I'm hopefully, you know, some success follows, but it definitely makes me happy. So, you know, I'm living the dream as far as that is. If I'm my own boss, I get to make those decisions.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. Yeah. You are your own boss. You're steering your own ship. And people, when they think about horse trainers, they just see them out there in the afternoons. They don't realize you're running your own business.
Yeah, it's difficult, but the people that have believed in me are just mind blowing. I mean, it's just being there and like, it's the coolest job in the world. If you get to do it with your friends, you don't even have to do it, you know, with like a clear mind. Half the people that come and ride are like hungover or something. I'm like, oh my gosh. Well, you know, we're getting through, but I love having the crew around me that's around me. I mean, I have one of my housemates. I have a farm here in Lexington that I lease, and one of my housemates is a equibase guy. So he and a girlfriend of mine, they discern the numbers for me, and like, you know, they're on my team, and that's pretty cool because not everybody has such a good support system.
Yeah, you're also very active on social media, and we don't often see that with horse trainers necessarily. How important is that for you as you continue to grow and build your operation?
Well, hopefully, you know, I'm not the one who gets in trouble with it, but sometimes, you know, I just want to share the successes because it's cool. Like, people love horses. I love horses. It's a fun life.
Is it an important thing to help you grow your business and attracting new clients, or does it really not play into that side of it?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. You always hope for the best. It's definitely not my goal with it. I don't want to have to, you know, beg for attention or beg for owners. I mean, hopefully it comes organically because I've had some kind of bad experiences with owners and things like that before, and the social media helps, that's for sure. But I don't want to lean on it too much because I've, you know, there's been enough horror stories in the industry.
Yeah. Coming down to the final furlong here on this edition of Trainer Talk, visiting with trainer Kara Toy, and it has really been such a delight to hear her story and to walk through some of her memories as she's continued to develop and grow her training career. Now, Kara, less than 3 minutes left. I always like to end the program by asking trainers to tell me something about them that we haven't touched on yet that people might not know. So I know your life is horse racing. I know you're very family-oriented. I know you're a very hard worker. What are some things that outside of racing you might also enjoy?
Ooh, fox hunting.
Really?
Yeah, fox hunting is probably one of the coolest sports you can do with a horse. And it's cool. I wish I could do more. I wish I grew up with more of it. But some of the people I met through that sport have helped me along the way here. So I guess I wish there was more fox hunting. I wish there was more time for it. But the thoroughbred horse is one of the greatest breeds. Obviously, I'm partial, but the versatility and the things that you're able to do with them is pretty dang cool. And I'm a champion for the sport and for the breed. So,
how often do you get out fox hunting now? Do you have time to do it?
Well, it's a winter sport, and so hopefully I get to gear up. Mostly Sundays are the only days I can go. So it's tough, but it's cool. It's one of the most fun you can have.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, this hour has been a lot of fun too, Kara, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be with me on Trainer Talk today. All the best moving forward, and we'll be cheering for you to go get that first winner. I know it's going to happen soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Kara Toy on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion of the show, as always, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast at your leisure, not just this show, but all of our Trainer Talk shows and all of our weekly programs available via podcast for you right there at horseracingradio.net. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, for my special guest, Kara Toy, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.